You're listening to Queer Talk here on WRFN, Radio Free Nashville. I'm your host, Matthew Stafford, and coming up on today's broadcast, you'll hear interviews with openly gay and lesbian Presbyterian Church USA members Trace Gibbons and Beth Van Sickle regarding the PCUSA's recent vote to lift their ban on the ordination of openly non-celibate lesbian and gay members to become ministers, elders, and deacons. Both Gibbons and Van Sickle are currently studying and hope to be ordained as ministers in the Presbyterian Church USA. PCUSA is now the fourth mainstream Protestant denomination in the USA to allow such ordinations. Please stay tuned for this episode of Queer Talk. Queer Talk is produced by Dr. Joyce Arnold. Welcome back to Queer Talk here on WRFN, Radio Free Nashville. I'm your host for today, Matthew Stafford, and I'm talking with Trace Gibbons, who is a member of Second Presbyterian Church here in Nashville, Tennessee. And we're talking about the recent changes to the Presbyterian Church's constitution, which allows now for openly gay, lesbian members to serve in a greater capacity in the church. Trace, welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
All right. So tell us a little bit about the history of this ordinance, first of all, and what the repeal of it means, or the repeal of the law within the Presbyterian Church.
Sure. I will try to condense 30 years worth of history into a few words. But the specific language that was amended in the Book of Order, which is a portion of the church's constitution, was actually not inserted into the Book of Order until 1996. So whereas some people will say that what was changed were historical standards, they were actually not added to the Book of Order until 1996. So the change that took place was to remove exclusionary language in the ordination standards that will allow for openly gay and lesbian people of faith to serve in ordained offices. It's also important to know in the Presbyterian Church that ministers alone aren't the only ordained officers. Elders, deacons who serve the church are also officially ordained positions, which is not necessarily typical in other denominations. So it really has broad-reaching implications for the ordination of officers in the church.
So tell us a little bit about your experience. You're a lifelong Presbyterian, right? You grew up in Louisiana.
I am. I was baptized at Metairie Ridge Presbyterian Church outside of New Orleans many moons ago and have been a member and active in the Presbyterian Church ever since. I have been in Nashville for a little over 20 years and have been at Second Presbyterian since that time. I had a long career, about 25 years in healthcare management, working for numerous companies here in Nashville, before finally giving in, I'm going to put it that way, to the call to go to divinity school. And I don't necessarily believe in coincidences, but a lot of things magically fell into place, which makes me more confident that answering that call was really what was meant to be. So I started at Vanderbilt Divinity School in August of last year and will begin my second year of a three-year program in August of this year. I have not decided what I'm going to do post-graduation. That is a discernment process that I'm currently engaged in. An ordained position is more likely at this point, given the changes in the Constitution. They weren't necessarily, I didn't throw that out completely as a possibility, but it's certainly more likely now that these changes have been made to the Constitution.
So tell us a little bit about More Light Presbyterians and what the organization has been, what its purpose has been, and what your participation in the organization has been like.
Sure. The organization itself is over 35 years old. It was founded in 1974 and really has worked as its mission to make the church, particularly the Presbyterian Church, a true community of hospitality, following the risen Christ and working for the full inclusion of gay, lesbian, transgender, bisexual people of faith in the ministry and leadership of the church. So it is a national organization. We have presence all really across the country. People can be individual members. We have congregations who vote through their leadership to become officially affiliated with the organization. There are actually three churches here in Nashville that are officially affiliated. So this work for change in the Constitution has been a primary focus really since I've been on the board, because I became involved really because of the changes that took place in 1996. So when the exclusionary language became part of the Book of Order, that motivated me to action and became involved as first as a member, and then based upon some leadership activity here locally, was asked to serve on the national board. And now I serve as the co-moderator, which is a fancy Presbyterian term for co-chair, with the Reverend Janet Edwards, who is out of Pittsburgh. And we have alternating our terms expire at different times, so her term will expire in August, and I will continue on for another year, and then someone will have a new co-moderator. So we share the responsibilities and leverage each other's strengths.
Is it always gender balanced?
We try. It's not always the case, but we do try to do that. We have had Aaron Swenson, who is, as far as we know, the only transgender ordained Presbyterian minister, serve as co-chair at one time. So we do try to balance. We've had, you know, both gay people and non-gay people serve in leadership capacities. The board tends to be about 50-50, just kind of works out that way. So it's we do strive for both gender and orientation balance, as well as geographic balance within, you know, across the United States. So obviously, now that the changes have been made to the Constitution, there's a lot of effort around implementation of that change. We put together a booklet to help the governing bodies who will be examining candidates, as well as guidance for the candidates themselves, to know how to negotiate the ordination process with the removal of that exclusionary language.
What was the vote like here in Tennessee among the Presbyterians?
That's a great question. The Presbytery of Middle Tennessee voted in favor of ratifying the change. So a majority of the 173 presbyteries had to approve what came out of the national body. And so I believe the count, final count was 97 of the 173 voted in favor of the change. And in the Presbytery of Middle Tennessee, there was, if I remember correctly, 93 in favor, 86 opposed, and one abstained. So not an overwhelming endorsement, but certainly the majority that was required to ratify it here in Middle Tennessee.
Do you know, was it similar in West and East Tennessee?
Actually, it's similar in East Tennessee. The Presbytery of East Tennessee voted in favor of the change. The Presbytery that is really the West Tennessee, the Memphis area, the Presbytery of the Mid-South, did not vote in favor. It was not ratified by like 2 or 3 votes, so very close.
Very close.
There's a presbytery that's in the uppermost east part of Tennessee that did not vote in favor of the change. Some of the presbyteries people might find surprising that voted in favor of the change. All three presbyteries in the state of Alabama voted in favor of the change. Many up and down the North Carolina, South Carolina, Florida, that some people consider to be more conservative, voted in favor of the change. So again, I mean, it wasn't just a majority of 87 that was needed. The ratification went way beyond that.
Mm-hmm. All right. So what do you think, what are your hopes for the next, say, next few years, next 5 years, looking down the road at, you know, this new ability to see a potential new crop of gay, lesbian, ordained leaders in various positions in the Presbyterian Church all across the country? What do you think about that? What does that look to you like?
Well, I'm trying to be realistic and not, pretend that it's not going to be a struggle to still get people through the ordination process and into ordained positions. Because if you think about what happened in the Presbyterian Church when ordination of women was approved, I mean, that's been 30 years ago, but I would still argue that women are not treated with complete equity by governing bodies, by congregations calling ministers. You have many fewer senior pastors who are women at churches than you do men. So I realize that it's going to take some time, but what I hope happens are two primary things. One is that the loss of talent to other denominations is at least slows. We've had many very gifted GLBT people who have left either the church completely or certainly the Presbyterian Church and taken their gifts elsewhere. And so I hope we put an end to that. To that departure. I also hope that the church can begin to heal from 30 years of debate and discussion and really begin to move to what the church is all about. You know, taking care of the disenfranchised, taking care of the poor, spreading the gospel of Jesus Christ. You know, all those things that Jesus called the church to be. And taking focus away from setting up barriers to people serving within the church. So I hope we can move beyond that, but I also know it's going to take some time. And so I don't want people to just kind of sit back and relax and say, okay, well, this is done, so, you know, nothing to worry about. It's going to take some concerted effort.
All right. Well, thanks so much for being on the program, Trace Gibbons. It's been great to speak with you.
Thank you for having me.
So, Beth, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Tell us a little bit about just your background and your background within the Presbyterian Church.
Okay.
And what kind of got you on the road to being in the process of ordination?
I actually was born into the Presbyterian Church. I'm a cradle Presbyterian. Raised, baptized, I was ordained as an elder in the Presbyterian Church.
And where did you grow up?
Southwestern Pennsylvania.
Okay.
They say that you can't swing a dog by its tail and not hit a Presbyterian.
In that area?
Yeah. But I grew up Presbyterian in a rural area.
Mm-hmm.
And so that made things a little bit complicated. But I was ordained as an elder when I should not have been.
Mm-hmm.
The pastor at the... Well, let me back up a little bit. When I was 20, the pastor of my church came to me and said, Beth, I need to talk to you. my picture had been in the newspaper for something having to do with the church. My girlfriend's mother called the pastor of the church and said, "She's dating my daughter."
And it's kind of a mean way.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
So she wasn't supportive of you?
No, no. Called her the dragon lady.
Oh, my gosh.
But, yeah, so he came to me and he said, "My wife and I can heal you and your girlfriend."
Wow.
Yeah. And you know, we didn't know any other lesbian or gay people.
And this was the church you had grown up in.
Yes.
That had to be terribly painful.
It was. But, you know, I didn't know what to say. I didn't know what my, you know, best mode of defense was. But I just looked him in the eye and said, "We're not gay." Because I thought, there's nothing wrong with us. We don't need to be healed.
Right.
And I wasn't going to go there with him. And that was the best way I knew of to get him to go away.
Did it feel, I mean, being someone who's been, you know, committed to the church and growing up in that, did it feel like you were having to really compromise yourself to feel like you had to lie for safety's sake?
I didn't feel like I was compromising myself. I felt like it was the only way. At the time, it was the only way I knew of to be true to myself. I felt like, you know, everybody knew that I was there and that I was committed to the church. And I didn't want to have to be told that I needed to change to stay in the church.
Right.
So that was the best way I knew how to deal with that. And I don't regret that.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, I see people, I've heard of people who've been in reparative therapy, and that's just horrendous. That I think it's soul scarring. And I'm glad that I lied to him at that time. I've never seen, when he left the church a year or so later, and then a wonderful woman came, and she and her husband were very supportive. I didn't know that they knew that I was lesbian. She ordained me as an elder, and I learned many years later that people came to her and said, "Do you know that you are ordaining a lesbian?"
Mm-hmm.
And she said, "You know, if you can bring me proof, okay, we'll deal with it. But otherwise, it's a non-issue."
Mm-hmm.
So nothing ever came of it. I've never seen the pastor since then who wanted to heal me, but I'm going to look him up one of these days after I'm ordained.
Right.
And say, "I'm here."
Wow.
Despite
all of that.
Yeah.
Wow. So where are you in seminary right now?
Here in Louisville, at Louisville Presbyterian Theological Seminary.
Okay. And what year are you?
I'm going into my third year, but I'm also going to obtain a marriage and family degree. Marriage and family therapy degree.
Mm-hmm.
I want to do pastoral counseling. I would love to work with people who have been hurt by the church and who have been told they're going to hell, because they're not. You know, religion just hurts people so badly through guilt, through, you know, judgment, and that's not who God is. It's just not who God is. It's distressing to me the way that our churches have treated people who are LGBTQ. I mean, there's nothing wrong with any of us. We're all being the people that we were created to be, and Psalm 139 says you're fearfully and wonderfully made, you know, by God. And so I want to help get that message out, and that there are churches that are safe for people to come to, and it matters.
Have you sometimes felt, not just as a lesbian, but as a woman, that there are two strikes against you as far as being able to find a church that will not only be open to a lesbian, but to be open to a woman pastor as well?
I've been fortunate in that, you know, in the church I grew up in, there was a woman pastor before I moved away, and there was a woman pastor at the church that I went to in Arizona. And in my home church now in Columbus, Ohio, there are three pastors on staff, and they're all women. Mm-hmm. So that, for me, I've not seen that as a barrier. Mm-hmm. I know for a lot of women it can be, depending upon geographical location. But I don't see that as a barrier. I believe that, you know, God put me on this journey for whatever reason, and God will see me through and take me to where I'm supposed to be.
What kind of response have you gotten so far from instructors at the seminary, from your teachers?
The instructors at this seminary are wonderful. They're just fabulous. Extremely supportive. Just very fabulous. Fabulous people. Mm-hmm. Students, for the most part, everybody's very supportive. There are some who aren't there, but that's okay, because I feel like it's part of my call to extend to them the hospitality that I want extended to all of us. And I try to have conversation with them as much as possible. And I've also tried to point out to some of them that, you know, we're kind of in the same boat. They're extreme on the other side. We're over here, and we're in the same boat. We just have different opinions and different understandings of Scripture. Mm-hmm. So there are common beliefs. We're just in different places on those beliefs. Mm-hmm.
Do you have any expectations of what kind of church you might be called to serve? Do you have a feeling that God's going to lead you to something a very challenging, like an inner city ministry, or do you see like being somewhere in the Midwest, in the country, or do you see do you have any feeling on that?
I believe right now that my call is to be a counselor. But I also, the door is open for interim ministry, like to go into churches and help them heal to get ready for the next pastor. My girlfriend tells me all the time, don't say you're not going into parish ministry because that's where you'll end up. So you know, I believe that I will end up wherever I can best serve.
What have been some of your more challenging courses in seminary?
I'm 47 right now, and I've had trouble with Greek and Hebrew. I'm learning that I have ADD.
Oh, wow. So that's something you didn't know.
No, and I have to figure out a new way to learn after all these years, and it's kind of mind-boggling.
Wow.
But I'm sometimes challenged by church history classes, the way, you know, white men, formed a lot of what our churches believe, and mm-hmm. I have to wonder what things would be like if women had been involved in that, and other minorities. It is what it is right now, and we can, thankfully in the Presbyterian Church, we can change things because mm-hmm. of our form of government. So.
Let's see, you've been involved with more like Presbyterians.
Yes.
Right? How long have you been involved with that organization?
I've served on the board for 2 years now. One of the reasons why I wanted to serve on this board is because when I lived in Arizona, I met a woman who became like my fairy godmother. Her name was Rosemarie Wallace, and she was originally from Baltimore, and she taught me how to be out in the church. And she died in 2004 from cancer. And I kind of, she was part of the group who began what was formerly more like Presbyterians, what was formerly PLGC, Presbyterians for Lesbian and Gay Concerns. And I wanted to see this through for her, to in memory of her.
What kind of special advice did she have in regard to being out in the church?
She didn't actually speak advice to me. She lived it.
She demonstrated it.
Yes. She just was out there. She didn't worry about what anybody else thought. She just lived her life as faithfully as she possibly could. Faithfully to God and faithfully to herself. And that made a huge difference in my life. Mm-hmm. She and her partner changed my life just by example of the way they lived.
I'm trying to think, are there any special things you can think of that you would like for people to know, to hear?
Yeah, you know, the Presbyterian Church has finally ratified and changed ordination standards. If people are looking for a church and they want to go to a Presbyterian church, do some homework. Not all Presbyterian churches are safe for us. There are websites that you can check out. More Light Presbyterians, MLP.org, has a listing on the website of safe churches. Covenant Network of Presbyterians, I think they are covenet.org,
mm-hmm.
Has a list as well. You know, check those out.
Right, because there are some congregations that the congregations are...
Right.
The whole presbytery is a member of the network.
Yes. Yeah. So in spite of the fact that it's now a Presbyterian standard,
mm-hmm.
You can't assume that congregations are going to go along with that.
Mm.
But a lot definitely are, but and more are... Because it's the wave, mm-hmm. more are welcoming... becoming welcoming, but just be careful.
So do your research.
Yes, yeah. Definitely.
Do you have their website, or do you know what their website is?
Which?
More Light.
Yeah, it's MLP.org.
Mm-hmm.
And for anybody listening, please don't let anybody tell you that you're going to hell, that you are an abomination, that God doesn't love you, that you don't belong. Don't ever let anybody tell you that, because it's not true. You know, God loves you for the person you are, and believe that, because it's true.
What is it exactly about counseling that makes you feel especially drawn to it?
Probably because it's helped me so much. Having somebody listen and really hear what's on your heart, and to understand pain, and to say that God's not like that, that it makes a difference. It really does, and it's a form of ministry that is needed, and. It's one of those things that it's not spoken about as much as it should be. I just feel so strongly called to that.
What's the next step after graduation?
Finding a job.
What's that like for people who are just getting out of seminary? What kind of process do you go through to look for a church?
You fill out a personal information form, and it's put into this big database that churches who are looking for pastors also, and it's a matching system.
Mm.
And hopefully things match up, and they'll interview you and hear you preach and that type of thing. There are between 60 and 80, and it's a guess, queer people who are in the process. Many are ready for churches. They've completed ordination exams, they've completed seminary, and they have their personal information forms out in the system. And now that ordination standards have changed, just they're waiting to hopefully be matched with churches. It's going to be a leap, I think, or at least a while before that happens. Before churches are ready to take that step, because it's going to be controversial,
mm-hmm.
obviously. But there are already out pastors serving in the Presbyterian Church. So it's got to be the right person at the right time and the right fit with the church. So it's not an automatic process.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome.
That's been awesome.
Thank you.